I'm Aryeh Cohen, and this is Daf Shui, weekly daf. Give me 40 minutes or so, and I'll give you a daf or so. We're in the run-up to Martin Luther King Day, Erev Chag of Martin Luther King Day. And as every year, people are trotting out various quotes out of context of Martin Luther King to show that he was just your average, nice liberal. But we have to remember about King that towards the end of his life, he was not liked in the country because he was messing things up. He came out against the war in Vietnam. He said you can't divide justice and justice. You have to struggle for racial justice in the United States. You have to struggle for justice around the world. You can't be for war and be for justice. You can't be against violence, Jim Crow violence in the South, racial violence in the North and the West. You can't be against that and for violence in Vietnam. And the same goes today. The only way to stop the violence is by stopping the violence. And so in honor of Martin Luther King Day, we must work for peace. We're beyond the third month of the war in Israel, Palestine, and Gaza and the West Bank, you know, spreading to Lebanon. The only way to stop that war is by stopping the war. There is no day after if we don't stop the war. And now for a special request. If you enjoy this podcast and learn something from it, or are just distracted by it from doom scrolling for a bit, I want to ask you to help support the podcast. We are a pretty lean operation. We have a walk-in closet, a mic, a laptop, a gemara, and a make-believe Beit Midrash of thousands. Some of you have been supporting Daf Shui for a while, and we really appreciate that. You can support Daf Shui Weekly Daf by going to our Patreon page, www.patreon.com/DafShui, which is also linked on the podcast page, and become a card-carrying member of the Beit Midrash. Remember, we are not one of those corporate Daf Shui outfits. We're more of a rickety storefront shtiebel Daf Shui. Thank you so much. Who's Daf?
Our Daf! Who's Daf? Our Daf! Who's Daf? Our Daf!
This week's Daf, starting with the Mishnah, is mainly a Tanaitic affair. The Mishnah itself, of course, but we'll also look at the Tosefta, which is quoted in the Bavli, and is the controlling text for the next couple of pages, and also quoted in the Yerushalmi and the Sifri, the Tanaitic Midrash to Numbers. There are some differences between these texts, which we'll note. Another fascinating issue is that the Mishnah centers the daughters of Tzlafchad and the legal implications of their demand to inherit since they had no brothers. While the Bavli, while seemingly commenting on the Mishnah, actually detours to another set of issues not totally disconnected but not totally on point. The question of whether the land of Israel was divided amongst those who left Egypt or amongst those who entered the land of Israel. I'm sure many of you are now saying, how could it be that those that left Egypt since they mostly died in the desert? This is at the heart of that controversy. So this daf is one of those dapim in which a braita, a Tanaitic non-Mishnaic text, is cited, and then the Talmud proceeds to expound that text and only eventually gets back to expounding the Mishnah. We start with the Mishnah on the bottom of 116b in the layout that was popularized by the widow and brothers Ram Lo these 150 years ago. Bnaut Tzlafchad Natlu Gimel Chalakim Benachala. The daughters of Tzlafchad took three parts in the inheritance of the land of Israel. We have mentioned this several times, but it makes sense to do a short recap of the story of the daughters of Tzlafchad, which is told in Numbers 27, but is foreshadowed in the census list recorded in Numbers 26. In the family line of Menashe, Chefer is listed as the son of Gilad, who is the son of Machir, the son of Menashe. Chefer's son is Tzlafchad, and he is named with the added explanation, and Tzlafchad, son of Chefer, had no sons but only daughters, and the names of the daughters of Tzlafchad were Machla, Noah, Chogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. End quote. They are the only daughters listed in the census. The next chapter opens with the daughters of Tzlafchad coming before Moshe and lays out their plaint. Our father died in the desert, but he was not of those who died with the Korachites who rebelled against God. Tzlafchad died of his own sin and without sons. And there's, of course, a whole discussion in the Midrash later on about what his sin actually was, whether he was the one who was bundling sticks on Shabbat or otherwise. Why, they ask, should his name be erased from amongst his family only because he has no male heir? Give us his daughters an estate amongst our father's brothers. Moshe took the matter up with God, who agreed with the women. A new law was promulgated. In the verses that have become so familiar to us over the past several pages of Bava Batra, should a man die without having a son, you shall pass his estate on to his daughters. Our Mishnah is inscribing the results of that law. So the daughters of Tzlavchad took three parts in the inheritance, and what were they? The Mishnah continues. Chelek avihen shaya im yotzei Mitzrayim. The first part was that they inherited their father's share, who was among those who left Egypt. This ruling sets the Mishnah up as siding with those who say that the land of Israel was divided up among those who left Egypt. That is, the basis of the division of the land was the number of people who left Egypt as opposed to those who actually entered the land. These two groups are necessarily different since most of the people who left Egypt died in the desert. There were those who died after the golden calf. There were those who died when they attempted to enter the land prior to the command, and those who died in the plague that God brought upon them just prior to this story of the daughters of Tzlavchad as a result of their consorting with the Moabite women. The second part is the part that Tzlavchad would have inherited together with his brothers in the estate of his father, Chefer. We learn this in the previous Mishnah, that the daughter of the deceased inherits together with the brothers of the deceased in the estate of the father of the deceased. Bishaya b'chor notel shnei chalakim. Finally, since Tzlavchad was a firstborn, he would have inherited an extra portion as the firstborn. So the daughters of Tzlavchad inherited these three portions. Before we start the Bavli, let's take a look at the Tosefta. And before we look at the Tosefta, let's go back to look at the verses in Numbers 26, which generated the two sides in the "who do we want to count as those inherit the land" debate. On the one hand, there is verse 53, La'ela techaleka aretz b'nachala b'mispar shemot. To these shall the land be apportioned as an estate by the number of names. To these seems to imply that these that are going into the land. On the other hand, verse 55, two verses later, reads, Ach b'goral yechalek et aretz lishmot matot avotam yinchalu. But by lot shall the land be apportioned, by the names of their fathers' tribes shall they inherit. By the name of their fathers' tribe, with an emphasis on fathers, seems to imply those who left Egypt. Okay, as promised, the Tosefta. The Tosefta, Bava Batra 7, 8-10, starts off in the same way as our Mishnah does. Benot Tzlavchad, Natlu Shlosha Chalakin Benachala, Chelek Avihen, Shayam Yotzei Mitzrayim. The daughters of Tzlavchad took three parts in the inheritance of the land of Israel. The first part was that they inherited their father's share, who was among those who left Egypt. Reb Lezer ben Yaakov Omer Af Chelek Achi Avihen. Reb Lezer, or Eliezer, which in the Palestinian spelling, ben Yaakov says, even the parts that their father's brothers inherited from Chefer. That is, Tzlavchad would have inherited a portion because of his inheritance in his father's estate. He would have himself also gotten a portion of the land because he was older than 20 when he left Egypt. The daughters would have inherited both of these portions. Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov continues explaining, Lefi shalonitz naha aretz ela liyotzei Mitzrayim, velonit chalka ela leomdim ba'arvot Moav. Yarash ha-shevet et shivto, v'chazar ha-shevet v'yarash ha-tara'uilo. Since the land was only given to those who left Egypt, and was only divided amongst those who entered the land, each tribe inherited their tribe's estate, and then, on top of that, inherited that which would have been theirs based on those who left Egypt. This is all a bit confusing. The Tosefta, however, endeavors to explain it. Ketzad, shnei achin shayu miyotzei Mitzrayim. How so? There were two brothers who were among those who left Egypt, the Exodus generation. Now, this is, of course, let's say there were two brothers, right? It's not. There were two brothers that we know of, but let's say there were two brothers who were among those who left Egypt, the Exodus generation. Le'achad yeshlo tisha banim, u'le'achad yeshlo ben achad. One brother had nine sons, and the other brother had only one son. B'lifnehem beit chameshet kurin. And there were fields of five kur grain growing capacity, which were theirs as their stake in the land. Tisha natlu beit letech letech, ve'achad natal beit letech. Nine sons each took a letech, which is half a kor, that is one-tenth of the five kor, and one son took a letech. So the children of the one man had inherited in the aggregate nine letechs, and the son of the other man only one letech. Hechzirum lavoteim, chazru avot varishu tabanim, tishanat lu mechza ve'achad natal mechza. They brought all 10 letechs back to their fathers, metaphorically, since it was land, and you can't bring it back. I mean, you could, but it would be really hard. And the fathers then bequeathed them to the sons based on the fact that the two of them were of the Exodus generation and the sons were of the Joshua generation, as it were. So nine sons were given half of the five kors worth, and the other one son was given the other half. This is what was meant above by each tribe inherited their tribe's estate, and then on top of that, inherited that which would have been theirs based on those who left Egypt. Rav Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Af Nitchalka Aretz Yotzei Mitzrayim. Rav Shimon ben Elazar says, the land was not only given to the Exodus generation, but it was divided up for the Exodus generation. Ketzad, Haya min ha-yotzin mi-mitzrayim u-min ha-omdim ba-arvot Moab notel shnei chalakim. How so? If one was of the Exodus generation and the Joshua generation, those who went into the land, one takes two parts. Mi-yotzei mitzrayim v'lo min ha-omdim ba-arvot Moab v'lo mi-yotzei mitzrayim notel chalak achad. If one was of the Exodus generation and not of the Joshua generation, or the opposite, of the Joshua generation, not of the Exodus generation, one takes one part. Hamitlonanim v'hamiraglim v'adato shel Korach lo natlu chelek baretz. Those who complained to Moses about the manna, the spies, and the Korach rebellion community did not take a part in the land. Aval habanim yershu b'zchut avot avoteihen u'v'zchut imot imoteihen. However, the sons of these folks did inherit a part of the land by the merit of their grandfathers and grandmothers. V'chein haya Rav Shimon ben Elazar omer, Yoshua v'Kalev natlu shlosha chalakim b'nachala, shehein miyotzei Mitzrayim, u'min ha'omdim barvot Moav, v'shenatlu chalkan shel meraglim. And thus, Rav Shimon ben Elazar would say, Joshua and Kalev each took three parts in the inheritance of the land, for they were of the Exodus generation, they were of the Joshua generation, by definition, kind of, because Joshua, and they took the parts of the other spies. Okay, so that is the Tosefta, which does and does not comment on the Mishnah, but does expand our understanding of what it means that the daughters inherited their father Tzlavchad's portion since he was of the Exodus generation. We are now going to take a look at the Sifri numbers, which is a Tanaitic or Halachic Midrash to numbers. Sifri numbers, according to Menachem Kahan, a very prominent Midrash scholar, who edited and annotated a critical edition of Sifri numbers, the Midrash is the earliest of the Halachic Midrashim and dates to the 3rd century, and so contemporary more or less with the Mishnah and Tosefta. We turn to Sifri numbers to Pinchas, paragraph 132. Rabbi Ashiya Omer, Liotzei Mitzrayim Nitchalkal Aret, Shneamar Lishmot Matot Avotam Titnechalu. Rabbi Ashiya says, the land was divided amongst those who left Egypt, as it says, by the names of their fathers' tribes shall they inherit. Numbers 26:53. Ma Talmud Lomar La'ela Techalek Ha'aretz Mipnei K'tanim. What then do we learn from the first half of the verse? To these shall the land be apportioned, to exclude minors. That is, only adults get a part in the land of Israel. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, Leva'ei Ha'aretz Nitchalka Ha'aretz Shemar La'ela Techalek Ha'aretz. Rabbi Yonatan says, rather, the land was divided amongst those who came into the land, that is, the Joshua generation, as it says, to these shall the land be apportioned. Uma Talmud Lomar Lishmot Matot Avotam, Shina HaMakom Nachala Zeo Mikol Nachalot Shebatorah, Shebuchol Nachalot Shebatorah, Chayim Yoshim Et HaMeitim, V'chan Meitim Yoshim Et HaChayim. What then do we learn from the second half of the verse by the names of their fathers' tribes? God distinguished this inheritance from all other inheritances in the Torah, for in all other instances of inheritance, the living inherit from the dead. And here, the dead inherit from the living. This paradox is explained by Rabbi, the nom de plume of Rabbi Yehuda the Patriarch. Rabbi Omer, Mashal lama dabar dome, l'shnei achim kohanim shayu ba'ir, l'ze ben echad v'l'ze gimel banim, yetzu lagoren, ze natal se'a ve'elu natlu gimel se'im, v'horishu et avoteihem, v'chazru v'chalku b'shaveh, V'yashu meitim et ha'chayim v'chazru v'chalku b'shaveh. Rabbi says, to what might this be compared? To two brothers who were in a city. One brother had one son, and the other brother had three sons. They went to the granary. The son took a se'ah's measure of grain, and these three sons took three measures of grain. They then inherited the grain to their fathers. That is, they gave the grain to their fathers, who subsequently divided up evenly amongst the four sons. In this sense, the dead, symbolized in the story by the fathers, inherited from the living, that is, the sons, and then divided it up evenly. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Zenatal Chalko v'chelek aviv, v'zenatal chalko v'chelek aviv, nimtzeit mekayem la'ela techalek aretz menachala, v'nimtzeit mekayem l'shmot matot avotam titnechalu. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, this one took his portion and his father's portion, and this one took his portion and his father's portion. You have in this way fulfilled both, to these shall the land be apportioned, and by the names of their father's tribes. The Sifrei seems to be working off the same ideas as the Tosefta, but is citing different sages, is using a different conceptual vocabulary, and even when both the Sifrei and Tosefta invoke a parable, the story has different characters and number of characters. It could be that there were two distinct traditions which passed on this material. We now move on to the Yerushalmi on our Mishnah in our tour of Tannaitic texts. Now, the Yerushalmi is not Tannaitic, but the Yerushalmi has a version of this Tannaitic text. The Yerushalmi starts with actually talking about the daughters of Tzlafchad. This is a piece that is found two daf later in the Bavli. It is interesting because it rewrites the opening of chapter 27 in Numbers. That is the encounter between the daughters and Moshe, with the daughters making a somewhat halachic argument to Moshe. Bnot Tzlafchad amru lifnei Moshe Rabbeinu. Im anu bnot Tzlafchad nirashit avinu. Im ein bnot Tzlafchad tityabei mimenu. The daughters of Tzlafchad said to Moshe, our master, if we are the daughters of Tzlafchad, then let us inherit our father. If Tzlafchad has no daughters, then our mother should remarry through the Yibum or Leveret marriage ritual. This ritual is deployed when a married man dies with no offspring, and then his brother marries the widow in order that the line of the deceased brother may carry on. The daughters are confronting Moshe, basically saying that either we exist or we don't. If we do, which is pretty obvious, then we should inherit. Miyad vayikrav Moshe mishpatan lifnei Adonai. Immediately, Moshe, and this is a quote from the verse, brought forward their case before God. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kein b'not Tzlafchad dovrot, Tein lehen ahuzat nachala, Tein lehen bakarko, Tein lehen b'mentaltalin, Tein lehen chelek avihen, b'toch achei avihen. The Holy Blessed One said to him, rightly, that is to Moshe, rightly do the daughters of Tzlafchad speak. Give them a share in the inheritance, give them land, give them movable goods, give them their father's part amongst their father's brothers. Yerushalmi weaves its own narrative into the verses which open Numbers chapter 27. The continuation of the sugi in Yerushalmi parallels the Sifri's debate about whether the land was divided amongst the Exodus generation or the Joshua generation. Yerushalmi differs with the Sifri in that in the Yerushalmi the positions are attributed to Rabbi Yashia and Rabbi Yochanan rather than Rabbi Yashia and Rabbi Yonatan. Following this, Yerushalmi cites the opinion we saw in the Tosefta attributed to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, a Palestinian Tana of the fourth generation of Tanaim, that if one was both of the Exodus generation and the Joshua generation, they would get two parts in the land. If one was only from either the Exodus generation or the Joshua generation, they would only get one part in the land. However, in the Yerushalmi, this opinion is attributed to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, who was an earlier Palestinian Tana. Again, this does not point to difference in substance, but in transmission. Finally, the Yerushalmi does introduce a tradition which we have not seen before. Bnot Tzlafchad natlu chamisha chalakin, chalkan im yotzei Mitzrayim, v'chalkan im ha'umdim barvot Moav, v'shehaya b'chor natlu shnei chalakim, v'chelek avihen b'toch achi avihen. The daughters of Tzlafchad took five parts, their part with the Exodus generation, their part with the Joshua generation, the extra part that Tzlafchad would have gotten as a firstborn, and finally the part that Tzlafchad would have inherited with his brothers from his father. This is new, as the Mishnah says that the daughters inherited three parts. What is added here is the part of the Exodus and Joshua generations. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Matznita lo amra ken, Ela naton titein lahem achuzat nachala betoch achi avihen, Hadahi dechtiv vayeplu chavlei menashe asara. Rabbi Yossi says, the Mishnah didn't say this. Rather, as the verse says, you shall surely give them a secure holding amidst their father's brothers. This is what is written, Joshua 17, and there fell 10 parts to Menashe. Rabbi Yossi is refuting the point that the daughters collected 5 parts. Rather, since the verse in Joshua 17, when the land is divided, accounts for 7 members of the Menashe family, 6 plus Hefer, Tzlafchad's father, that leaves only 3 parts for the daughters, since it summarizes the division by saying, and there fell 10 parts to Menashe.
This week, in honor of the fact that the world seems to have gone completely crazy and everything is broken, the podcast is brought to you by Shazam for Idolatry. Do you ever walk down the street and see people doing stuff that's got to be idolatry? Have you been in one of those conversations where your best friend's new friend is mouthing off about stuff that is so off the wall it's got to be idolatry, but you don't know how to find out? Well, now there's an app for that, Shazam for Idolatry. It's just like Shazam, but for idolatry. Point it at the offending person, the action which is an abomination, the specious political ideology, and the app scans it and tells you on the spot whether it's idolatry or you should just chill out. And if you mention Daf Shvui, you get the app free for a month. Just go to www.shazamforidolatry.com/Daf Shvui. You won't regret it.
Avoid eternal damnation.
When we turn now, finally, to the Sugya in the Bavli, we find that the controlling text is the Sifrei, which is followed exactly in terms of the sages and their order, with the interesting changes only being that the Palestinian terminology of Talmud Lomar is switched out for the Bavli's Ma'ani Mekayem. The Baraita, which is essentially the Sifrei's Midrash, is introduced by the Stam, trying to discern which side of the Exodus generation, Joshua generation divide the Mishnah is on. It's not. The Mishnah teaches according to the opinion who said the land was divided according to those who left Egypt, as it is taught. And here the Bavli quotes the Bavli's version of the Sifrei, which we'll go through just for a sense of completion. Rabbi Ashi Omer, Liotzei Mitzrayim Nitchalka Haaretz, Shenamar Lishmot Matot Avotam Yinchalu. Rabbi Ashi says, the land was divided amongst those who left Egypt, as it says, by the names of their fathers' tribes shall they inherit. Numbers 26:53. Here the language is a bit different. What do I establish then from the first part of the verse? To these shall the land be apportioned. To these, meaning just as these, excluding dependents. Rabbi Yonatan Omer Levae Haaretz Nitchalka Haaretz, Shenamar La'ela Techaleka Haaretz, Binachala. Rabbi Yonatan says, rather, the land was divided amongst those who came into the land. That is the Joshua generation. As it says, to these shall the land be apportioned as an estate. Elamani mekayem lishmot matot avotam yinchalu, mishune nachala zu mikol nachalot shebaolam. Shukol nachalot shebaolam chayin yorshin meitin, vekan meitin yorshin chayim. What do I establish in the second half of the verse? By the names of their fathers' tribes shall they inherit. This inheritance is different from all other inheritances in the world. For in all other instances of inheritance, the living inherit from the dead, and here the dead inherit from the living. Amar Rabbi, im sholach ha-mashal amad davar domat, l'shnei achin kohanim shayu be'ir achat, l'achad yesh lo ben achad, v'achad yesh lo shnei banim, v'halchu l'goren. Zesh yesh lo ben achad, notel chelek achad, v'zesh yesh lo shnei banim, notel shnei chalakim, u'machzirin etz lavihen, v'chozrin v'cholkin b'shaveh. Rabbi says, it's Rabbi. To what might this be compared? To two priestly brothers who were in a city. One brother had one son, and the other brother had two sons. They went to the granary. The one who had one son took one measure of grain, and the one who had two sons took two measures of grain. They then returned the grain to their fathers. That is, they gave the grain to their fathers, who subsequently divided it up evenly amongst the four sons. In this sense, the dead, symbolized in the story by the fathers, inherited from the living, that is, the sons, and then divided it up evenly. The last part of the Midrash is quoted in the Bavli, gets the exact same place as the Sifrei, but by a different route. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, La'elu u'la'elu nitchalka la'aretz, kidei l'kayem shnei mekraot halalu. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, and here we turn the daf, the land was divided to both these and those, that is, the Exodus generation and the Joshua generation, in order to fulfill both of these verses. Ha ketzad. Hayami yotzei Mitzrayim notel chalkom yotzei Mitzrayim. Hayami bayaretz notel chalkom bayaretz. How so? If one was of the Exodus generation, then one took a part with the Exodus generation. If one was of the Joshua generation, then one took a part with the Joshua generation. Mikano mikan, notel chalko mikano mikan. If one belonged to both groups, one takes a part from this and that. Maraglim, Yoshua, v'kalev, natlu chalkam. Mitlonanim v'adat korach lo ayalem chalek baretz. Habanim natlu b'schut avi avihen u'b'schut avi imotan. Joshua and Kalev took the portions of the other spies. The complainers and the Korachites did not have a part in the land. Their children took a part by the merit of their father's father and by the merit of their father's mother. My mashma, dahai lishmot matot avotam biyotzei Mitzrayim k'tiv. The Stam answers their own question. What does this teach? That this statement, by the names of their father's tribes, is written about those who left Egypt. Dilma l'shvatim kamarla, dichtiv natati ota lachem marasha ani adonai, yurusha hi lachem yavotechem, uliyotzei Mitzrayim kamarlehu. Perhaps, rather, it is referring to the tribes? as it is written, and I will give it to you as an inheritance, I am God. It is an inheritance to you from your ancestors, and this was said to those who left Egypt. To summarize, the issues in the Tosefta and the Bavli are A, whether the land was divided based on those who left Egypt, or B, those who entered the land. If A, then the descendants of those who left Egypt upon entering the land divided the estate that would have belonged to their ancestor who left Egypt. If B, then those who entered the land would each inherit an estate. There's a third option attributed to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar in the Tosefta, Sifri, and Bavli, and to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha in the Yerushalmi, which is that if one was amongst those who left Egypt, they would get one share. If one was among those entering the land, they would get one share. And if one was among those who left Egypt and those who inherited the land, they would get two shares. Another fascinating thing about this sugya, and we've only started, is that this is a halachic discussion and dispute about something that has absolutely no practical significance, or at least for the most part has no practical significance, yet the rabbis are going at it with the same gusto. Finally, before we close, we ask the Meiri to summarize and complicate, which he does by imagining the reality of the land division and bringing all the considerations that we have and more to bear upon the calculus. The Meiri says, the land was divided based on the tribes. That is, they made 12 divisions of land, equity being reached by trading off more bad land for less good land. The only measure of value was distance from Jerusalem. So closer to Jerusalem is better, farther away from Jerusalem is worse. And there is a dispute about whether the difference in distance is worked out also with giving more land to those farther away, or whether there is an actual monetary payment made to those farther away from Jerusalem, and only the quality of the land is compensated with more bad land. This whole process is somewhat spelled out in a discussion on 122a. Spoiler alert, there too the role of the lottery is played out on top of these other calculations. That is, the land was divided by lottery, but miraculously the lottery, which was the minor dimension, also took these considerations of quality of land and distance from Jerusalem into consideration. This, then, is not a per capita division, but a per tribe division, whether one holds that it is according to those who left Egypt or those who entered the land. And that is where we are going to stop today. Thank you so much for joining me today in the Beit Midrash in the Closet. As always, my undying gratitude to Eli Unger Sargon, my producer. Please check out his podcast, 4 Cubits. Also, my deepest gratitude to my chavruta Charlotta von Robert, communications team here at Daf Shvui, Shachar Cohen Hodos, and the voice actor today, Andrea Cohen Hodos. Please follow me on Twitter as long as the place doesn't burn down or lose electricity or whatever, at Irmiklat, IRMIKLAT. You can also email me at thewidowandthebrothers@gmail.com. Every email is answered personally by me. Thank you so much. Be well, be healthy. See you next week.